There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Volume.
Could he do that?
Are you on drugs? What?
Charles Darwin.
The Nerds is where it's at.
Welcome everybody back into Nerd Sesh. As always, I'm Carson Brebber, and alongside me is Logan Candon. And we are back, baby, live on YouTube again. As we said, we are going to be doing this consistently throughout the playoffs. And this was another fun day of action. A couple blowouts in there, but we ended the night on a real high note with that awesome, just classic rock fight, Pels OKC game test, who ultimately is just going to grind this one out. We're going to talk about that. Of course, we're going to talk about all today's games, but we're going to start, Logan, with what was like the premier matchup on paper. That being Mavs Clippers, the series that a lot of people had been most excited for with the history there and just the caliber of these two teams. Kawhi Leonard out for this game with the right knee inflammation that kept him out down the home stretch of the regular season. And yet LA gave Dallas a beatdown anyways. And the star of the show, Logan, was your nemesis, James Harden. Do you have anything you would like to say to James at this time?
I would like to issue a heartfelt apology to Mr. James Harden. I did, in fact, in the weeks leading up to the playoffs, I slandered you on many different podcasts, not just this one. I called him washed. That is verbatim. I called James Harden completely washed. I expected absolutely nothing from him in this series, and I predicted and anticipated Harden getting benched somewhat early in this series. So,
And I remember we were talking about, what lineup configurations can the Mavs go with so they have three strong point of attack defenders? You said, what do they need a third for? I don't care who you put on James Harden.
I did. And you know what, man? He kind of abused having that third matchup. You know, the role does make a lot of difference. Harden also just had a great game. And I think my criticism of James was deserved for the stretch he was on. I think I may have gotten a little overzealous with how far I took the line there. Harden was having an abysmal stretch of this season. I recited a lot of the numbers during our shows. He was shooting below 30% on catch and shoot jumpers. He was hovering around 30% on wide open threes, on open threes. And he had been a real non-factor in terms of, you know, shots outside of his jump shot, in terms of creating rim pressure, in terms of getting to his mid-range looks. In this one, Harden just didn't miss. You know, he got to that step back three on a lot of guys and was hitting everything in the first half. I also think Harden just did a phenomenal job of setting his teammates up for success. And that's the real stretch to look at, man. That first half where the Clippers just pull away. Mavericks really can't get anything going. And Harden is draining everything. You know, I was disappointed in the Mavericks' defensive effort. I thought they could have tried a little better. I was disappointed with that. So I think it'll be a little tougher on Harden, but he was the star of the show. We got him that early lead, and the Clippers never really looked back. And he made me eat a big, fat, humble pie today, Carson. He made me long and hard in that first half. I don't think he's going to do this every game, but there are things that are abundantly clear. James Harden is still skilled and talented enough to do this in an individual game setting. He is still impactful on the game in terms of setting his teammates for easy looks. And, you know, he may not be the most consistent player, but in this role, he can thrive and he can succeed, man. And if we get this version of James Harden the rest of the series, it is very, very encouraging for the Clippers and their playoff hopes. This season, Carson, again, this is, like you mentioned, without Kawhi Leonard, the Clippers were 20-5 this season when Harden scored 20 or more points. They were 8-1 when he scored more than 25. Like, in a lot of ways, James Harden helps this team raise their baseline, but in a lot of ways, he's the cherry on top, man. If he produces, the Clippers normally succeed. And this one without Kawhi Leonard, man, you couldn't pick a better game for him to step up in a very big way. So, hat off to you, James. I apologize. And I'm gonna walk back my comments a little bit, man. That man is not, in fact, washed. He looks very clean, man. He looks real fresh too. So I apologize, Harden. You made me eat a big, fat, humble pie today.
Without Kawhi out there, he is not just the cherry on top. They need him to be the sundae, and he was. Like, he was awesome. And I was with you on a lot of the Harden criticism, man. It was a super concerning level that he was playing at down the stretch, and we have seen some clear regression from him. We saw it in last year's playoff run. Even when he had these explosions, there was a level of volatility there because of his lack of quickness and rim pressure, and then his struggles finishing around the rim against bigger, longer athletes that meant night to night he was not going to be the consistent offensive force that we're used to. But my feeling has always been, as a third option, drawing the opposing team's third best perimeter defender, he's going to cook. And even in this game, as like the number one option and one of only two stars out there on the floor, when his pull-up jumper is falling, which it usually is, he also just had a really bad shot-making stretch at the end of the season, which I didn't expect to hold up, then he's this awesome decision maker who can just kind of brutalize you in isolation and out of pick and roll with that pull-up shooting. And that's what he did in this one. It was like a vintage step-back clinic from him. And particularly, he barbecued Luka Doncic. And that was kind of the theme early in this game in the first half when he was really going. The Clippers just exploiting Luka's defense. He was disastrous on that side of the ball. And so they ran several possessions in a row, these coffee screens for Harden. And they did it a couple times later in the game with whoever Luka was guarding at that point, Terrence Mann, whoever they were trying to hide him on, basically. And they would switch that action. And then Harden would just so easily get a step on Luka. And this is not anywhere close to peak quickness downhill James Harden, but he was getting by him with ease, with no resistance. And then he would kick out, and the Clippers spot up shooting was ridiculous in this game. Or Luka would play a little bit too far off because he's worried about getting beat off the bounce. And then Harden would just rain those pull up threes on him. So late in the game also, like, they were legitimately matched up on each other. The Mavericks put Luka on Harden for a stretch, and he just couldn't stay in front of him then. So the Mavs just had an awful, awful first half, mostly offensively, but the defense was an issue as well. And they were consistently put in rotation by the Clippers attacking Luka Doncic, involving him as much as possible. And ultimately, they weren't sharp enough on those rotations. I thought they had some poor effort on closeouts throughout this game, but it was just a significant disadvantage that they were put at because of his inability to defend these star creators at the point of attack, and particularly James Harden. But everybody was bad in that first half for Dallas. Like, it was as bad a half of basketball as you could possibly play. And considering how great this team was down the stretch, it was legitimately shocking. They were missing good looks around the rim. The spot-up shooters were just clanging. Kyrie and Luka both were taking a lot of tough pull-up jumpers, and they were missing all of them. And then by the end of the half, they just felt disengaged. It was like Luka didn't want to assert himself at all at that point. He had kind of just taken his foot off the gas in those last few minutes of the second quarter. They felt totally deflated, and you could see guys didn't want to take shots. There's one possession where I think it's Derrick Jones Jr. and Dante Exum, like, they have an advantage, and they're basically playing hot potato. Neither of them wants to take a good look from three. And I do think one of the things that we flagged as a concern, Logan, with this Mavs offense is you have this unbelievable star shot creation, and you have guys who theoretically can knock down shots around them. But your starting configuration features two pretty questionable spot-up shooters. Like, P.J. Washington will have his good stretches. He'll also have his bad stretches, and overall hasn't been very good there. Derrick Jones Jr. is even more of a question mark, and in this game, P.J. goes 2 of 7 from deep. Not good enough. Derrick Jones Jr. only 0 of 1, as I mentioned, didn't seem comfortable, confident taking those shots. And so ultimately, they just need to play the guys who will confidently step into those catch and shoot jumpers. PJ is always going to take them. Like, PJ's volume, since he got to Dallas, he is like consistently third on the team in shot attempts. He's willing to step up and take those looks, but he doesn't always make them. So the supporting cast didn't produce offensively. Defensively, they had some real issues, and Luka was the biggest part of that. And Luka didn't play well in this game offensively either. I know that the stat line ends up looking pretty good because he's Luka and he can just kind of will himself to that. But he ends up with 33 points, just 6 assists, though, 11 of 26 shooting. And he only had 11 points in the first half. And they made their little mini runs in the second half. But like, the game was pretty much over at that point. I thought Terrence Mann did a very solid job on him in Kawhi's absence. But ultimately, I thought it was mostly just an issue of shot selection. Like, Mann is able to pester him, right? And he has some quickness, but Luka is just so much bigger and stronger that he should be able to consistently win that matchup if he is willing to assert himself physically and to not just say, they're sitting and drop, Zubats is hanging out in the paint. Like, I don't really want to go downhill. I'm just going to see if I can make this mid-range step back or this step back three. And he didn't in this game. And there were too many spots where it felt like he had a guy in jail trapped on his back and pick and roll. And instead of getting to his floater, which he did very easily a couple times, he would still step back in that situation. It was a frustrating Luka game where you felt like he had an opportunity to get to his spots in and around the paint more consistently. He had an opportunity to bully guys in isolation more frequently. And there were spots where he did posted up the guards at a couple points in this game that led to good offense. Also, every time that they switched Zubats onto him, he scored. That was 3 possessions, 2 step-back jumpers. He tends to take those step-out looks against Zubats, but it's because he gets a lot of space because Zubats has to play off of him because he's worried about the drive. And then he got fouled one other time. So he had his good moments. Like, of course, he's Luka Doncic. He's an absolute freak offensively. But this sort of inefficiency, this little playmaking impact, just like not creating that many great shots for his teammates and ultimately not pressuring the paint enough, that was not a good performance from Luka. He has that tendency to settle at times, and this year it's become more acceptable because he's been so ridiculously good on those step back threes. But when those shots aren't falling, it's like, dude, you're 6'8", you're crazy strong, your touch is unreal, you can make every pass, you play with such great pace that you're able to trap defenders consistently on your back, get into that painted area, create advantages for yourself actively and your team. And he didn't do that enough in this one. He'll dominate this series offensively when he buys in. But because of that underwhelming offensive performance and because of how bad he was defensively, I think everybody for Dallas except for Kyrie was bad in this game. But Luka bears a good deal of responsibility. I think some people might see the stat line at the end of the day and say, oh, Luka and Kyrie doing everything, no surprise. And to some extent, that's true. Like, Luka still got his in the home stretch of this game, but it wasn't a good performance from him.
I mean, to me, the second half really doesn't even matter when you're really evaluating this because the game was over at the end of the first half. Like, the time for Luka to exert himself was in that second quarter stretch. Luka was settling for a ton of pull-up jumpers. He was really passive, and that's something that I had an issue with, was he was generating really good looks for P.J. Washington and Derrick Jones Jr., these non-shooters. But at a point when these guys are clearly not wanting to shoot the ball and clearly missing everything, that's just a spot where I need Luka or Kyrie to consciously go, hey, I got to take this game over. I got to get to my spots. I got to do my thing. And this was one of the worst halves and quarters for the Mavericks this season. They score 8 total points in the second quarter. They go 2 of 20. They don't crack 30 total points until 1 minute left in the second quarter. And like you said, credit to the Mavericks and for Kyrie for cutting the lead to 12. But I just thought that there were a lot of different things that the Mavs could have done offensively to generate a higher shot quality. One, like you mentioned, just involving Zubats in actions, I thought they didn't run nearly enough high pick and roll. And I know they ran a lot. Obviously, it's a heavy base of Dallas's offense, but I just mean higher, like logo screens with Lively or Gafford or whoever has Zoo on them and just getting him involved up high. I didn't think there was nearly enough of that at the beginning of this game. And then, like you said, dude, if PJ Washington and Derrick Jones Jr. aren't going to be hitting their shots, give me Josh Green, give me Dante Exum, give me Tim Hardaway Jr. Like, the Clippers sold out on Luka. They made it really evident in this game that when those lineup configurations are out there like that, they are going to send way more attention to Luka and try to make these non-shooters kill them. But you just got to try something else, man. If the Mavericks can't be this offensively limited if they want to win this series, man. Just they have to get more out of their spot-up guys, because Luka and Kyrie are going to command that kind of attention every single game. And then on the flip of this, Carson, I just think I think Ivica Zubac is kind of just a nightmare matchup problem for Dallas. I think he causes a lot of issues for Dallas. We'll get into the Clippers side of the thing. I'll wrap up the Mavericks, though. Point blank, period. They got to shoot better. Dallas, Carson, is 5-9 when they make 10 or fewer threes. You know, 3-point shooting and being prolific from behind the arc is just a basis of this Dallas offense. And they go 10 of 33 in this game. As you mentioned, Derrick Jones Jr., PJ shoot horribly. And I don't want people to look at this as a Luka game and go, this was good, because he ends up with 33 points, 13 boards, and 6 assists. In the first half, he dropped 11 points on 4 of 13 shooting and 1 of 7 from deep. His defensive effort, Carson, you touched on it, was horrible. I was so disappointed. They were picking on him. That one possession with Harden, dude, Luka is standing like laterally to him. He's just giving him the lane, and Harden pushes him all the way to the paint until he stops and hits a floater. And not only was I disappointed with his defensive effort too, I thought Luka's conditioning was really bad, man. I didn't think he looked like he was in like game shape, like ready to go. It looked like these first two quarters really ate him alive. The good news for Dallas is, I don't know if you agree with me, I don't really think it can get much worse. This was a rock bottom performance from Dallas. At least I hope, man. This was really bad. And so if they're going to do this, I'm glad that they got it out of the way in game one and can move on. But, they can't come out with this kind of effort. And I also just thought, man, the Clippers came out with a really good game plan. I thought Ty Lue had the Clips ready to play, ready to go. They had a great game plan, a great way of, it was deliberate. They had a deliberate way that they were going to attack Dallas, and I thought they came out the gates doing that, man. Dallas looked underprepared and just underperformed, man. I think this is the worst Dallas is going to look all series long.
If it's not, bro, then I don't know what the hell could happen. Literally, how could they look worse? Kawhi wasn't on the floor, and they were down, what was it, 26 at the half? Like, that was almost an embarrassment.
Yeah. It was like 30, man. It was crazy.
It was a humiliating half of basketball, and there's no way to come back from that. The Luka is a good defender narratives, man. Can we put that one to bed? Can we please put that one to bed? Because it's just so absurd, and you see it in this game. He is so clearly the weak point on this Dallas defense, and just was relentlessly targeted.
Well, not even like physically, man. It really, like, it's an effort thing too, dude. Luka wasn't trying. Like,
yeah, it's an effort thing. And I thought also off ball, like, there's a couple spots where it's like, Luka, you got to rotate over and get a hand up, man. But that lack of foot speed is also a real issue. And I thought that was pretty consistently exploited in this game. The other good news for the Mavs, which I think is better news, is that they do have options to tinker with. And I thought as this game went along and they could sort of see, okay, this lineup clearly is not working right now. Zubac is going through Daniel Gafford. Derrick Jones Jr. won't shoot the ball. Like, they were able to try some different options. And I thought the Kleba minutes were a positive. They actually were +6 with him on the floor, and he played a lot as this game went along. And obviously this game didn't mean all that much after the first half, but he embraced the physicality of that matchup with Zoo in a positive way. He attacked the offensive glass. He made some nice, simple reads as a passer. And then he wasn't knocking down his spot up jumpers in this game, but he does bring that dimension to floor spacing. And I really want to see more Josh Green in this series. I just think he brings like the most complete combination that you could want from a role player. To me, PJ kind of has to play because he's just the best perimeter defender, and he does have the athletic tools to have an impact offensively when his shot is falling that not a lot of guys here can replicate, and that size is really important. But when you're looking at like the Derrick Jones Jr., Dante Exum kind of minutes, I think Exum has been really good this year because he's knocking down his spot-up jumpers and defending well. But Josh Green, when he came into this game, just like brought that infusion of athleticism and energy that if he had been out there earlier, maybe could have made a difference. He had three stocks in 9 minutes. He was attacking in transition. And on top of that athleticism and that defensive playmaking, he's a very solid decision maker, like quality passer offensively. And he shot the ball really well this year. So I would like to see him probably more than Derrick Jones Jr. Derrick Jones Jr., I would say, is a better on-ball point of attack defender, but just more offensively limited. Sometimes Josh Green, it's like a little out of control offensively, but I just think he brings more positive traits to the table. And the Mavs like have a solid depth of options that they can explore there. So that is the good news in terms of room for improvement. And Luka will absolutely play better. The bad news, of course, is the Clippers dominated this game without Kawhi Leonard. And we've talked about James Harden rule in that. You mentioned Zubats. Beyond Dallas just struggling so significantly, what were some of the other keys to LA dominating this game?
Yeah, I mentioned Zoo. I think he just poses such a problem for Dallas, like defensively. I don't know what they really do to slow him down. He's so big. I mean, I just throw it to him on the low block and like let him go to work. They set him up for a lot of easy shots, like that one where Russ was coming down in transition, laid it off to him. He's just so big. Like that shot is just almost ineffectable at times, where even guys like Lively and Gafford really can't touch him. I mean, and he can dominate the glass in those minutes too. I wonder if Dallas should maybe explore some options. They're talking about maybe taking Derrick Jones Jr. out. I do think they need more offensive creation in terms of guys who can attack closeouts and hit shots in the mid-range and just do more with the ball in their hands. But I wonder maybe if Dallas should tinker with a like Kleba and Gafford or Kleba and Lively kind of look where they go like really big. Sure.
We saw a little bit of that tonight, but yeah, I agree. That's something to try at least.
I think Zoo is just a matchup problem where and that's why I really think it's important that LA gets him involved more when they're on, or excuse me, Dallas gets him more involved in the pick and roll when they're on offense. Tire him out, attack him on defense where he's at his weakest, because he's just a mismatch, man. That guy is so physical and so big that he's just hard to mess with. And then I thought this was a great game from a lot of Clippers role players. I want to give a big shout out to Russell Westbrook. You talk about the infusion of athleticism and energy off the bench. I've been critical of Russ, man, and I've been skeptical, but you talk about the difference in role this season for James Harden, Carson, and how he's the third guy. Again, his role is different because Kawhi's out in this game. I think the same thing with Russell Westbrook, man. I just think the Clippers it's a really good environment for both of these guys and their new roles. You're not going to be a superstar forever. You know, we'd like to think so, that not everybody can be LeBron and just be at their apex for 20 years. You know what I mean? We've been spoiled with a guy like that, and it makes you lose sight sometimes that we can. And I really think that off the bench as an energy guy, as a tempo setter, like when Russ came into the game, man, he's got some big time dunks that just fire the crowd up, or, you know, the road fans at least. He just infused energy. He got out on the break a couple of times. He was crashing the glass hard, just playing hard, man. This is a really good role and environment for Russ. Amir Coffey, I thought, gave the Clippers really good minutes and played really good defense tonight. The Clippers, like I said, man, about Ty Lue, like the Clippers just seemed really, really prepared for this game. They had a really good strategy on offense and what they were going to do. They were just ready, and that was a dynamic that I don't think I honed in on enough in the series preview. Is I do think the Mavericks are a better team, and I think we're going to get a better outlook. The Clippers have a ton of playoff experience and just, you know, knowledge of how to act and composure for the big moments, man. It's a lot of guys in Dallas like PJ or Josh Green or Dante Exum, man. You know, this is their first real look at, you know, actual playoff ball and competitive moments. And I think the Clippers have that advantage too. So the Clippers are really prepared, man, and I thought a lot of their depth pieces played well. But specifically, I think Zoo poses a problem the rest of this series. And I think Russ, guys like Russ, Coffey, Norm Powell, Terrence Mann, I think they all have the ways that they can really impact this game, man. The Clippers, I think I underestimated them a little bit coming in, man, and especially the fact that you didn't need Kawhi for this game is all the more encouraging.
It was a great performance from LA, and that was the challenge about their struggles down the stretch. Harden really having a rough end of the regular season, them letting the rope go defensively, although I think that was pretty clearly an effort issue for an aging team that had secured at least a top four seed at that point. But the Kawhi health thing also being another red flag, we saw how high the ceiling for this team was. And there's a reason that for a significant stretch of the regular season, they were the number two team out West in my eyes, and I think in most people's eyes. And to do this without Kawhi is super impressive. The collective shooting, of course, was super important. Like, this is just a great shooting team up and down, and you really saw the value of that. When they got the Mavs in rotation, they were just knocking down those open catch-and-shoot threes, did an awesome job there. Harden was nails as a pull-up shooter. PG, his shot-making is just so special. I mean, he had that stretch in the third quarter where he's just raining three threes on you in a matter of a few possessions, and you just kind of got to shrug and be like, what can you really do? One of them was a pretty open spot-up look, but he is just so smooth, man. Such a beautifully skilled perimeter shot-maker. But Zoo is a problem here, and this is something that we discussed in our series preview. If the Mavs could force this into a small ball series, and their small ball ultimately isn't that small because you have Kleba at the five, who's like a big physical 6'10 guy. You have PJ in the front court. That would be advantageous for them. But the problem is when you get those looks, like Zoo is just one of the best mismatch attacking bigs in the league. And I don't think he gets enough credit for that. He's a 92nd percentile post scorer. And not only is he absolutely massive in terms of height and then also super strong and physical, he is the best touch shot maker in terms of bigs, not named Nikola Jokic, and it's really not close. I think he actually shot like 66% in the paint outside the restricted area this year, which is even better than Jokic. I mean, he throws up those hooks and touch shots, and like you just know that they're going to go in a significant majority of the time. And Gafford looked absolutely shell-shocked, dude. Like, I love that approach from Ty Lue to immediately feed Zubats, attack what you don't think of as like a glaring mismatch, but Gafford's conceding a few inches. And if he's not going to be physical enough, then those are just going to be easy points for Zubats. So that was obviously a problem early in this game. And then consistently, he really effectively attacked the glass, and he did do a nice job of finishing as a cutter and a roller with that special touch of his. I do think they played him better with Lively, who, even though he's not as strong, he's not as stoutly built as Gafford, he's so much taller and longer that it felt like he actually fared better, and he just looked more like prepared for that matchup. And then I also thought Kleba, again, like there's one possession where Zoo ends up scoring on a post up against Kleba, but at least he like has to grind him with the back down. It was much more physical resistance than Gafford, who just, it looked like he was shooting layups over him. But Zoo is tough to match up with in this series, and he's just a really good basketball player. And defensively also, like, has his impact as a rim protector and a deterrent down there and a rebounder. He's really, really good, and I want to give him his flowers for this game. But you also mentioned just the preparation difference. Like, Ty Lue is just so much better as a coach than Jason Kidd, and I felt like we saw that in this game. You mentioned, like, the early game priorities, right? Feeding Zoo, attacking Luka whenever they could, forcing those switches with the guard-on-guard screens. But also, like, every ATO in this game, dude, was beautiful from the Clippers. They were just drawing up free buckets, and it felt like the difference in coaching caliber really mattered in this game that I maybe didn't expect it to in this series.
Coaching caliber, and then I just think overall offensive skill. I think I underestimated how many guys the Clippers can just go deep to that have bucket getting abilities, man. I mean, from Terrence Mann to Norm Powell to Russ to Harden to PG, you know, there's a real difference there. But preparedness, I think, was huge. Just the Mavs didn't have like a go-to, you know, action. They didn't have something they could just reliably get to. And I thought Luka generated a lot of high quality shots. Again, I thought he should have changed his approach after he saw how much his teammates were clanging the rim, but he was generating good looks immediately. But it's like, again, the Dallas wasn't deliberate in trying to do something. The Clippers, you know, you could tell there was an intent every time down.
Mavs, it's like Luka pick and roll, Kyrie pick and roll.
Yeah. It was, hey, Luka, figure it out, you know? And there's a flow. There was a, you know, like even when Amir Coffey's touching the rock, it's like, man, you know, Amir looks confident. He looks like he knows what he's doing, you know? And with Dallas, it's just a different dynamic. And so I don't mean to just point the finger at Jason Kidd, but I really think that is the guy that I look at and I go, hey, man, you got out-schemed. You got out-worked a little bit, man. And L.A. came prepared. And I wonder if the Kawhi thing threw him off a little bit. You know, if Dallas thought, oh, no Kawhi, you know, this is going to be a cakewalk. And Dallas got smacked in the jaw, man. That's a huge component, man. Ty Lue's a great coach. I can't remember who I was talking with, but I think we were doing a Twitter space or something, and somebody asked me, you know, who are the, like, top coaches that you have in terms of playoffs, getting guys ready, schematics. Ty Lue to me is number two, man, behind Coach Spo. Yeah. You know, those are the top two guys, and hats off. Ty Lue had these boys ready to play energy-wise, had them ready to go schematic-wise, and they had a really great game plan today against Dallas, man, and they executed to perfection.
100%. And even without Kawhi, if Harden plays at this level, then they just have a formula to be a really good basketball team. Then they have two great shot creators. They have shooting everywhere. They have a really solid physical big, great play finisher who can protect the rim. And so that's a good formula. But I definitely felt like Dallas did just kind of get smacked in the mouth in this one, and they didn't feel ready for the moment. And that's a big, big squandered opportunity, because we can look at this and say, oh, all these things will go better for Dallas going forward. Man, you had a game without Kawhi Leonard out there, and you got your ass kicked. You were non-competitive in that game, and that is a challenge. I do want to give Dallas props for guarding Paul George well. I thought that that was the one thing on the defensive end that they did pretty well. Both Derrick Jones Jr. and PJ did a good job. PJ Washington really has embraced the defensive side of the ball and been awesome there for Dallas. And then in terms of help, like, they met him at the rim twice. Once it was Kleba, once I think it was Gafford. He rose up for a classic PG poster, and he was denied both times. But like I said, he had that stretch in the third where it's just like, all right, PG's not going to miss. And ultimately, there's nothing that you can really do about that. Like, he just has those stretches as a shot maker that are unreal. I will say, Harden had an awesome game in this one, and I think the ability to exploit Luka is very concerning. I also think that this is still the same James Harden, the same James Harden who ultimately wasn't getting all the way downhill, right? He's getting a step, getting that free throw line area, and then making a decision. Really, it was that his step back jumper was phenomenal in this game. He was 2 of 6 inside the arc, and that is the same guy who could erupt for 40 in a playoff game last year, and then also could give you 12 on 4 of 15 shooting. Like, that is just the volatility that is baked into his game right now when he doesn't have that same ability to pressure the rim anything close to what he used to. This was an awesome game from him, but if you were asking him to carry this load consistently, I wouldn't feel great about that.
I think his hot start was the reason he started going to that more, though, and attacking more, because it was like, I'm hot. I'm going to keep going.
Oh, yeah.
'Cause you know, he normally doesn't get to that elbow jumper, but he bangs those 2 step back 3s. And then they have to respect him, so they close out hard, and then he crab dribbles in. They backpedal a little too far to the paint. He stops and pops and hits that pull-up jumper, because it's like, once you hit those 2 deep 3s, it's like, oh, my touch is on. You know, I'm feeling it now. Now I got to figure out if I can just hit everything. And Harden was – I'll give him that. And that's the part that I think I underestimated a little too much about James Harden. With these all-time great shooters and scorers, shooter's touch, man. You get 1 or 2 to get going, you get in that rhythm, and you can have a big game like this. I do agree with you, though. I don't expect this kind of thing consistently, and when his pull-up jumper isn't hidden, I think we still know who James Harden is, but it was a great game. And the one thing I hated, though, is after he started hitting those shots, then he started flailing and looking for fouls, and that one foul on Kleba really made me mad.
Oh, yeah, that was a bad call.
When Harden was behind the arc and he flails his left leg out and he initiates all the contact. That was still frustrating from Harden. But again, man, tip of my cap to the legend, man. A big game in a really big spot where the Clippers needed him. They needed him desperately.
Great Harden game. Also just incredible, dude. He's been in the playoffs every single year of his career. Like, that is impressive. Obviously, OKC, you got to give most of the props to Russ and KD, but still, like, that's pretty remarkable just to consistently be on that stage. Last thing I'm saying, though, when it comes to sustaining this, right, he's 2 of 6 inside the arc. Last year in the playoffs, James Harden gave you 3.5 field goals a game inside the arc on under 41%, and the finishing numbers around the rim were just brutal. So I just think perhaps there's a little bit of a victory lap for all the Harden people, and all I'm saying is we shouldn't count our chickens before they've hatched.
Do you want to call him Wash now? It was my turn.
Well, no, Logan, because he's washed. This man was in all-star conversations at the all-star break. You took it too far. But I consider myself a more reasonable Harden skeptic, and that does ultimately remain. I think this is still going to be a great series, but Dallas has to be more engaged defensively, have to shoot better, and ultimately play the guys who are going to knock down their shots. I think there's some lineup tinkering to do. Luka's got to be better, and they missed a big opportunity here with Kawhi out. And I really hope Kawhi plays, man. If Kawhi doesn't play, we're just going to look at this entire Clippers era and be like, that's one of the biggest what-ifs in basketball history, because people love to clown on the Clippers, but when they've all been healthy, like, they've so consistently been good with PG and Kawhi and whatever configuration around them. So I hope we see it, and I hope we get to see another awesome series between these two teams. The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more.
Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code NERDS. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code NERDS only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Let's talk about the closer tonight, Logan, which was a really awesome, classic, rough playoff game. OKC holds off New Orleans. We didn't get a chance to do a full preview for this series because we didn't know who OKC was going to be facing until Friday night. What was your biggest takeaway from this one?
You know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is bred for these kind of environments, and I thought it was just really appropriate that we got to see this Thunder team, you know, a lot of these guys collectively making their playoff debuts and their, you know, start on the biggest stage here, and we got to see them in a real playoff environment. Grimy, nasty, dirty, slowed down. You know, you really got to grind out the other team to get buckets, and the Oklahoma City Thunder answered the call, man. SGA, you know, didn't play a perfect game, but he's just so consistent that throughout the game, he's going to work to find those shots. And he gets to the line 7 times, knocks down 6 free throws. He goes 11 of 24. He's got 28 points, 6 boards, and 4 assists. And he has a couple of bad turnovers towards the end of this game where it's like, lights getting a little too bright? What's the verdict going to be? Because it's really these crucial moments where everybody dictates their decision on, you know, you can have your stat line, but did you win or lose? When the chips were down, SGA may have had a couple bad possessions, but he also slammed the door. And I think it just gave you a great picture into who he is and what he does. That's what I said after SGA hit that big, that's what SGA does, man. He is going to find that shot. He's going to hunt it. He's going to do it every possession. And he's got a counter to it. I just think that because of how the Thunder play ball, they may not be the most optimal team for these rock fight environments, but they're going to consistently generate high quality shots. Like the fact that they can run 5 out consistently with Chet, you know, and Lou and these guys holding everybody to open up all this space for their guys to attack. It just gives SGA and J-Dub clean paints, man, where they can go with these guys and either get all the way downhill or slam on the brakes. And for all these young guys, I was really impressed with the Thunder's young stars, man. SGA consistently hunting and finding his shot, generating good looks. Jalen Williams throughout the game, consistently hunting and finding great looks. And then Chet Holmgren, you know, he had one hell of a task on his plate today going up against a guy like Jonas Valanciunas. And I want to give a lot of credit to the Thunder Collective for the effort that they had on the glass. That's a tough matchup. And Valanciunas got his. That's certain. He had 9 offensive rebounds. He had 20 total boards. He's going to eat in this series. But the Thunder made life hard. The Thunder all tried really hard. And Chet did a great job of being a real rim deterrent and just protecting the rim. Five blocks in this game, made some game-changing plays there. Down to the wire, too, where he's got a crucial block. Like, you know, you can clown on Chet what you want. Chet's very slight. And there were a lot of plays in this game where that was evident, where he's going up for a layup and goes to the ground, or he's going up for a rebound and he goes to the ground. He's going to get bodied, but he's not going to back down from the fight, and he is going to be one of the best rim protectors in the league, like he's been all year long. That was what I took away from this game, man, is this Thunder team may be young, but I think they're ready for this kind of environment. I think they're ready for the challenge of the playoffs, and they're not going to back down to anybody, man. They may be young, they may be inexperienced, but they're ready, and they got a lot of fight in them, man. I was really impressed with this young group, the energy, the effort they brought, and I don't know. I don't know why I should act surprised either, man. It's what this Thunder group's been doing all year long, man, and they show it to us once again here in the first game. I was really impressed with really the three big young stars for Oklahoma City.
It's a great win for them, dude, because this is a tough game to grind out when you don't have that playoff experience. And it was almost comical how little playoff experience was on the court in the fourth quarter of this game. Just like how many shots were being missed. And there was a lot of great defense played in this game, but there were also a lot of missed shots. And there was just sort of like a frenetic, chaotic feel to the game. It felt appropriate. Obviously, CJ's been there. BI's been there for one series. Larry Nance is like one of the most experienced playoff dudes on the floor. And OKC really has nobody. Gordon Hayward plays a little bit in this game, but obviously he's not closing. But SGA, I thought, proved himself in a meaningful way. I have been super optimistic about SGA in these playoff environments because I think we have a tendency to say, oh, that guy hasn't done it, so we can't give him credit, even if his skill set is conducive to delivering in that environment, just because SGA has never been in the playoffs as a first option. A lot of people have acted like he won't perform well there. And the one criticism that I could see about that is just the sheer physicality of the playoffs. Now, I think SGA generates a lot of physicality of his own. And I think the other notion that people will sort of lump in with the physicality is like, oh, he's a foul merchant. No, he draws a lot of legitimate fouls, but he is ultimately a slider guy. But he held up well there, I thought. And this is against some great point of attack defenders. What is so, so valuable about SGA's game is that, yes, he is so incredibly hard to stop downhill, and he's going to pressure the rim, and he was the leading scoring guard in the restricted area this season. But it's the ability to stop on a dime and kill you with that short mid-range shot making that is basically always going to be there and is going to make it so you aren't susceptible to, oh man, my pull-up threes aren't falling and I'm just going to shoot myself out of this game. He can consistently get to those high percentage shots without having to get all the way to the rim where help can converge on him. And he did that early in this game. He was on fire. And then they tested him in a big way. You mentioned that stretch where he has three turnovers in the fourth quarter over just a few possessions. And at a couple points, they were sending doubles his way that troubled him. He also just at one point, like threw a pass out of bounds off another one of the doubles as well. He just, was totally inaccurate with the pass he tried to make off that read. But ultimately, even against this awesome point of attack defense with Herb Jones and Trey Murphy, all these great dudes, he closed the door, got to that midi, and then had that and one runner. I just think he's phenomenal. I think he's one of the most dazzling scorers, if not the most, just in terms of like the spectacle of how he does it, how fun it is to watch in the league. And it was big to me that he was able to pull through even when things were ugly, even when he was challenged, both in terms of personnel and scheme. His decision-making like isn't elite. That is a reality with Shea. He's a very good passer, but he's not perfect there, but he was able to lean on just that special mid-range shot-making to close this one out. And the Thunder defensively were so clutch in this game. I want to give a big old shout out, Logan, to your guy. I liked him a lot. You absolutely loved Kayson Wallace as a draft prospect. He was your dude. And this is why. This is why I loved him too. The floor with this guy has always been so high. He's going to knock down his jumpers. He's going to make good decisions with the ball. And he is going to be a pest defensively. And I thought he was phenomenal on CJ on the last play of that game. Maybe a CJ isolation against a point of attack defender of that caliber isn't the best offense you can get, but he gave him fits, man, poked that ball out, and then ultimately won them the game. And that was really impressive to see from a rookie. And he should be playing more. He should be closing consistently. you can give him several more of those Josh Giddey minutes in my book, but that was a really awesome moment from a young guy on this super young team that delivered in a really tough situation.
Huge for Kayson, and he was kind of a big pest for McCollum all game long. I didn't understand that final possession from New Orleans. If I was New Orleans one, I would have had McCollum probably shoot that ball with like 5 or 6 seconds in the shot clock, because I thought Valanciunas down there on the glass, like, we just have an advantage. If he misses, there's a good chance that he gets the rebound and can go back up with it, or just point blank period, man, toss it to Valanciunas, you know, early in the shot clock and just see if he can get a look against Chet. But that's an advantage of Oklahoma City, man. It's just, they have so many guys that just do everything. And not just Kayson, you want to talk about defense, dude. Lou Dort, we all know what a menace he is, man. Put you in that Dortcher chamber. I thought he did a great job all night long on Brandon Ingram, playing him physically, hustling, crashing the glass. And on the flip of this, too, I'm glad you brought up the fact that, you know, dude, this is not an easy test for SGA or Jalen Williams in terms of the cast that they're attacking. Dude,
yeah.
Herb Jones, Trey Murphy, and Brandon Ingram. And it's not just the fact that they're all really long wings that, you know, are good defenders. It's the fact that, and I think Herb and Trey are in a different class than B.I., but it's the fact that all three of them on the court together, if they're all on the wings, like, that's just hard to drive into. That's a lot easier for those guys to dig and collapse on you when you're driving the paint. Like, it's like, you know, running through a forest or something. Those are a lot of tree branches that you're trying to get through that just makes life hard. And they persevered, man. The Thunder were up to the challenge. I will say, on that Giddey point, man, I just eradicate his minutes. I just wouldn't.
Eradicate?
I mean, like, what does
he do? Feels
like
an appropriately strong term.
I just sat there the whole game, and I was like, all right, man, well, he's not hitting the floater. He's not hitting the jumper. He's grabbing a couple of rebounds. I just thought, give it to Kayson, give it to Aaron Wiggins, give it to Gordon Hayward. Like, I don't know, man, anybody else. I was thoroughly disappointed. And I thought defensively he was a negative. I was thoroughly disappointed with Giddey minutes. But this is a great battle, man. And the Thunder was up to it, man. They're going to need this kind of energy and this kind of effort every single night against New Orleans, man, because they are a little bit of a physical disadvantage, I think, in terms of just size. But I think we can anticipate this, man. I would, though, man. I think I'd just sit Giddey the rest of the series, man. I don't really think he does anything for me. And because New Orleans is normally trotting out a smaller guard, too, if that's Alvarado or McCollum, I think you can get away a little bit with more with having a guy like Kayson out there, or another one of these guards like Isaiah Joe, or, you know, where you're not leaving yourself with a really bad mismatch, or, you know, one guy they can attack out there because the other team does too.
Giddey was very bad in this game, and I'm not a Josh Giddey guy. Been pretty open about that. Made a whole YouTube video about how I felt he was basically a walking playoff liability waiting to happen for this team, and some of the very concerning ways that we saw teams guard him in the regular season, where they would put their center on him and then they could have a full-time helper and you would just leave Giddey in the corner and he would brick or he wouldn't shoot. Then he played better down the stretch of this season, like significantly better. He looked a lot more confident. He was knocking down his open spot-up jumpers. He was attacking closeouts with more confidence and getting to his floaters and finishing better there. But I was always very concerned about how he would look in these spots, because ultimately he is still a poor shooter of the basketball, a poor defender, we all know, and the touch really has been inconsistent this year. Like, he had a good stretch with the floater post All-Star break, but it was pretty rough earlier in the year, and he really struggles to finish around the rim as well. So my concern with him has always been, yes, you're getting a really good passer. What does that matter if he can't leverage that passing by threatening the defense as a scorer? What does that matter if you're effectively playing 4-on-5 because teams don't have to guard the guy? And I thought this was a really rough showing from him. He gets the one bucket in this one, but unless he is going to confidently knock down spot-up jumpers and play offensively at the level he did down the stretch, play somebody else. Don't question it, because everybody else is going to give you more shooting and everybody else is going to give you better point of attack defense. I think Kayson's a better option. Wiggins, as you laid out, like, they just have so many good wings. Don't play Giddey when you are getting bad Giddey, because bad Giddey is really bad. I also want to give some extra props to Lou Dort, because he was phenomenal in this game. And I actually went on a Thunder podcast just last week and talked a little bit. And the guys who I was talking with were mentioning how BI in the play-in game against OKC drew that Dort matchup, but just because of the height advantage was able to shoot over him pretty consistently. And I thought Lou did an awesome job in this game of contesting all those jumpers and also getting up in his airspace, being hyper physical with BI. He doesn't really hold up very well against that level of physicality. And so he took a lot of tough shots in this one. And New Orleans is a really tough matchup for OKC in various ways because of how great their defenders are on the perimeter, because of how much length they have, because of just the sheer physicality of Jonas Valanciunas. But if their two shot creators aren't both consistently delivering, then they just don't have enough offensive pop. And that's why I was confident in OKC winning this series. BI wasn't good enough in this game, but Trey Murphy almost made up for it. Trey Murphy, so good, just with the pure shot making. My goodness.
Trey's awesome, but I mean, that's kind of what makes Oklahoma City's formula for the playoffs so beautiful too, is the fact that offensively you have these shot creators that are just going to do their thing in isolation and SGA and J-Dub. And then on the flip side, you have a guy that can go up against any lead perimeter initiator in the sport in Lu Dort and almost X them out. And then you have Chet Holmgren, who is going to just deter everybody away from the rim. And so it just, all these guys complement each other and they all pick up for their other deficiencies. And then the collective effort, you know, you may be losing a lot of size and physicality on the interior. The collective effort makes up for where they lack on the glass. Like, Oklahoma City's just damn good, man. And I wonder if they're going to be more trouble. I know they eke this one out. I think they're going to play better. I wonder if they're going to be more trouble in this initial run than we may have presumed, man. I still think that their flaws are what they are, but I don't know, man. Oklahoma City is really skilled, is really talented, and their guys are all really multifaceted, man, especially with Lu Dort shooting the ball the way he has this year. There's just a lot of really quality basketball players in OKC, man. There's so many up and down this roster. Great first win for this team too, man. And I didn't want it to be, I was glad SGA handled it the way he did in such a big clutch moment, because the narrative could have gone away from that game. You know, SGA has three or four turnovers in a big spot in the fourth quarter and ends up throwing this game away for Oklahoma City. Instead, the headline's going to be Thunder and them finish the job and handle business. I was just uber impressed with Oklahoma City, man. I think, I think they've got a real chance at still making some noise. I didn't pick them, man. I think there might be a chance.
I'm not sure this is a game that would in any way make me more optimistic about OKC. Like, they're clearly more talented than New Orleans. If this were a regular season game and they only won by two and it was this close and ugly late, you would probably be underwhelmed by that from OKC. I think we did see, like, some of the realities in the fourth quarter. For a stretch, they were kind of just throwing the ball around and throwing it to the other team too much. And they did test SGA's decision-making, and he wasn't perfect there. He pulled through. Like, that's the thing. They pulled through. They had enough. But you're not getting the New Orleans Pelicans in the next round. You're getting the Clippers or the Mavs, and those are just way better basketball teams. So I wouldn't say that this in any way, like, made me more optimistic about the Thunder, but I just think the Thunder are really, really good. And it is a rare team that is this young and is this good, period. Historically, it is like an extreme rarity. And to be able to hold up in this environment and win a game like this that is so ugly and is so physical is impressive. And Chet is the last guy who I want to give a specific shout out, because I love Chet. I've always loved Chet. I think that there's been a bunch of fallacies spread about his game throughout the years. Like, the guy is basically the ideal modern big. I was so extremely high on him as a prospect. I thought he was clearly the best guy in that class. And yeah, Valanciunas is a really tough matchup for him in terms of the physicality out of the post, but also even more so on the glass, because Chet is a great defensive big because of how he can guard in space and because of how he protects the rim. But it is ultimately that rebounding element in particular where he just isn't the best. But he consistently battled, and I don't want to make it sound like it's a participation trophy, but like, he really did, dude. He's jostling down there in the post, and that's always been impressive about Chet. He may weigh 190 pounds, but compared to Wemby as a prospect, that was one of the things where I was like, Chet is just more inherently physical. He doesn't have the strength to like impose himself to dominate people physically, but he is going to battle, man. He is down for a war, and I thought he was in this game, and defensively made huge plays down the stretch. Like, that was the star of this game. SGA had some awesome shot making. J-Dub had some really great moments, but it was the collective defense. And Chet has a steal and two blocks in the last 3 minutes of this game. Met Larry Nance at the rim a couple times. That's what he does. He is a generational rim protector. To be as great as he was there as a rookie just speaks to how special his length is, how special his timing is, how special his instincts are, and all of that was on display in this one. And I do think he has potential to have more of a sizable impact offensively too, because one of the keys to winning that Valanciunas matchup is playing him off the floor by consistently knocking down those pick and pop threes, just consistently being too much of a problem in space. And he took six of them in this game. He made a couple. I can't really think of a number of Chet pick and pop threes, or even as a trailer in transition, that would be too much. And I would be upset about it. Like, just keep on attacking there. He's such a great shooter. And even though the physicality posed issues for him, I thought this was a strong playoff debut from really one of the most special rookies that we've seen in this game in a long time.
I mean, he unlocks everything that the Thunder can do offensively. I mean, again, he enables them to attack all these clean paints and to punish teams for when they do that. Like, the five out just makes it work. Like, and there was one, man, too. Chet had another three where they just left him wide open. Again, Valanciunas didn't go out and contest it, and it just rimmed out. I mean, I'm expecting every one of those that Chet takes to fall. I mean, he's such an, even when he missed, I think he missed a free throw in this game, and that blew my mind. Like, I'm never really expecting Chet to miss a shot. He is such an elite shooter, and I think maybe they could even get more creative, Carson, if they want to give Chet some more handling responsibilities and stuff, and like inverted pick and roll, and try some of that stuff to, you know, to get Jonas to defend out in space, even exploit that even more, man. There's not really a good answer. And again, man, the more that Chet can do that, the more it drags the five guy out of the paint, more it, you know, opens up everything else for this Thunder offense. And again, for this to be the first playoff game for a lot of these young guys makes it all the while more impressive, man. It did get ugly. It did get a little scary there towards the end where it felt like a high school game where the ball keeps getting turned over the second it passes half court. But Thunder persevered, man. This is a big win for this young team.
Really good win. Really tough win. This series is going to be something of a war, but ultimately I do think they have too much offensive skill and they have too much talent to not win out here. But this was a really interesting test in their first game on this stage.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Logan, let's talk Bucks Pacers. because I picked the Pacers to win this series in six. And my thought process was basically, without Giannis, the Bucks are going to have a really hard time stopping this dynamic Pacers offense. There's specific matchup stuff that is really problematic. The speed and the pace of the Pacers against this slow old Bucks team, Brooke Lopez and drop against Tyrese Halliburton. And then I thought, Dame, with the level he's been playing at, with the lack of athletes, I don't love Milwaukee's formula to creating great offense, even against a very flawed Indiana defense. So I was like, if Giannis misses two games, I think Indiana steals them both. Clearly, I was wrong, because the score may not look that bad at the end, but this was a 30-point game at the half. This and Mavs Clippers both, it was just like, all right, this game's over within the first 20 minutes. What did you think of Milwaukee's performance in this one?
I was really impressed. Damian Lillard was a big reason of why I expected Milwaukee to, you know, survive Giannis's absence. Dame time's real. Dame's one of those guys that I just believe in. And I didn't know he was going to do this. I mean, this is a historic playoff performance. He goes for 35 points in the first half. It's the second most points in the first half of a playoff game in the play-by-play era. So that's since the 96-97 season. Carson, do you know who has the most? Can you pull that? Do you have that?
Most since 96-97 in the playoffs. Oh, man. So we're missing out on MJ's best performances. We're missing out on the double nickel and whatnot.
In a first half.
In a first half. All right, I'm going to let this one rip. I've got two thoughts. It's not Jamal Murray, is it?
It's not Jamal Murray. Who's your
Donovan Mitchell?
Oh, no, it's Kevin Durant. Versus the Clippers in 2019. I mean, just great company. But again, second most, dude. I mean, it's absurd. And then Dame doesn't score in the second half because they don't really need him. You know, the game was put to bed by that point. That was a crazy stretch. Indiana shoots 6 of 18. Milwaukee shoots 15 of 23. They go on an 18-4 run there. And, you know, Dame was super impressive. I also want to give a big shout-out to Chris Middleton. I thought he did a great job. A beautiful game, just beautiful game from Chris Middleton. But the thing I was most impressed with from Milwaukee was their defense and just how hard they were playing, how much effort I was getting, the addition of Patrick Beverley. I thought Beverley did a great job of providing energy, of talking, playing hard. I didn't know what to think of having like a Dame and Pat Bev, you know, guard tandem, but I think it can work considering that Pat brings a little bit of that shooting, can handle a little bit in that like secondary ball handling role, but you know, you can run those lineups and be okay. And I was super impressed with Brooke Lopez holding down the interior. That being said too, I was disappointed with Indiana's offense, Carson. I thought Tyrese Halliburton should have exerted himself way more on this game. Again, with these superstars in these kind of environments, it's like, it's not going right. The shots aren't falling. The guys aren't doing their things. Pascal Siakam is the only one playing a decent game right now. You know, it should have been, I needed a switch to get flipped there from Halley where he goes, I need to put up shots. Halliburton attempts 7 attempts in this game. You know, he only had 4 games this entire season where he attempted 7 shots or less. He has to impose himself more as a scorer. And if that's taking touches away from Miles Turner, I think he's going to shoot better. Don't get me wrong, but you got to do something else, man. They were letting Turner just let him fly. He goes 5 of 17 in this game, 3 of 9 from behind the arc. I think he'll shoot better, but I need Halley to get downhill more. I need him to get to that floater. I just need more, man. Halley's your number one guy, and if he's going to give you 9.7 boards and 8 assists with 7 shot attempts, that's just not enough. Again, Siakam balled out, man. Consistently getting downhill, creating a shot, hitting these post fades and stuff like that. So both sides, you know, I was impressed with Milwaukee's defensive effort, but I was also really disappointed with Tyrese Halliburton and how much he exerted himself as a scorer in this game, man. They need him to drop 20 to 25 a night in this series. And he did not pull his weight enough in this game. And credit to Indiana getting this thing back close in the second half, but can't let that happen, man.
I wasn't all that impressed by the Bucks' defense in this game. Indiana missed a lot of good shots. They missed so many open threes in this one. And I was disappointed with Halley. He just has to be more assertive as a scorer. And it's not that he's making bad decisions. I thought he created a lot of good shots, but like you say, everybody around you was clanging. At some point, you just have to take it into your own hands and create a shot for yourself. But also, he's passing out of the pick and roll so quickly before he gets into the teeth of the defense. He looked intimidated by Brook Lopez in a way that he didn't in their regular season matchups. He looked like he didn't want to get to that floater, like he didn't want to hit the paint consistently and then create those more significant advantages where they're even better, more valuable kickouts to his teammates. Right, the pick and pop to Turner and Siakam, that was open all day with Brook sitting and drop, but ultimately they didn't make enough of those shots for it to be super effective. When they would run an action with a wing or a guard screening for him and the Bucks would hedge hard or they would trap, Hallie was making the right reads over the top there. He was creating open looks, and there's nothing you can say. Like, he just has to get the ball out to the right people there. He had a beautiful skip pass to Obi Toppin, who just clanged. Everybody was just clanging. Nobody could make a shot. But Hallie runs 24 pick and rolls in this game, and he shoots out of pick and roll three times. So that's just where I'm like, you can make these good decisions, but it was too passive. He didn't get into the teeth of the defense enough. He had to assert himself more as a scorer. And this Milwaukee defense, to me, really doesn't have the personnel to make him uncomfortable. Like, he should be able to torch Brook in drop with his pull-up shooting, with his touch from floater range, with his playmaking. He has done it repeatedly in this regular season. And I know that this hasn't been the same Hallie post-All-Star break. He was down to like 17-9 on 57% true shooting. Just like, clearly wasn't the same after that hamstring injury. But I thought this was a really favorable matchup. And he just didn't assert himself as much as he could have and should have. On the flip side, he was thoroughly outplayed by Damian Lillard. And I think there have been many points at this season where the consensus would have been, yeah, Hallie is playing better than Dame. Hallie is the better player, maybe period, point blank. And he certainly had the better first half of the regular season before his injury. Dame was just out of his mind in this game. And although I don't think Milwaukee has anybody to make Hallie uncomfortable if he's aggressive, Indiana, on the flip side, has nobody who can guard Dame at all. And he just had it all going, man. He was getting downhill on Turner and Jalen Smith with those super high pick and rolls, classic, give him that big runway. And he looked relatively quick. He looked quicker than he has, I thought, for a lot of this season. And he was getting to the rim. They tried different coverages towards the end of the first half. They tried hedging. They tried blitzing. It didn't matter. Like, he would basically just reset. He was never sped up. He was never pressured. And that's another problem. Like, regardless of coverage, the Pacers just don't have good defenders. They don't have people who make you uncomfortable. And Dame just exploited that. Like, his shot making was ridiculous. And that's the other thing. He was just making everything in the first half. In the second half, he was not getting entirely dissimilar shots, and they gave him a different look where they were having the big play at the level of the screen. That was more successful. They got him to take a couple mid-range looks, just better value there for the defense than if he's taking open pull-up threes. They forced a turnover. So his shot quality wasn't great, and that's kind of been the theme for Dame like this year. He hasn't been the same Dame that we're used to. I love Damian Lillard. I was sure that he was going to be their best offensive player this year. I thought he was going to be the man who could bring them a title because he's one of the best half-court offensive players in the league last year. And alongside Giannis, like, what else could you need? But he wasn't that guy this regular season. And I'm not sure this is the performance that convinces me that there won't still be volatility with Damian Lillard, because he had that stretch where he was getting downhill, but that was also against some slow-footed bigs. And he went crazy. He went crazy because he was making a bunch of pull-up jumpers, and he can do that. But I don't know that he's been doing it consistently enough for me to be like, all right, Dame's back off this one performance. It was obviously encouraging. It was awesome. But against this poor defense, it was what they needed, 1,000% with Giannis out. And got to give props to Bobby Portis and Chris Middleton, too, for stepping up. This Indiana defense is just so bad. Like, it really is so bad. They have to produce offensively at a really high rate or they're not going to beat anybody. Dame was spectacular in this one. But like we're talking about with Harden, like, I do think we should hold off before throwing the resurgence party.
I think you, I mean, said the key phrase about Indiana in this series is if they don't have an offensive explosion, they don't have a chance to win this series. They have to go off. They have to make this a track meet. They have to just outshoot and outrace Milwaukee. You know, it's a race to 130 points. You know what I mean? That should kind of be the mentality for this team. And they were giving it right back to there'd be possessions where Indiana would score. And then guess what? Milwaukee was getting it right back on the other end because of bad transition defense or something. I do think Dame did a good job of turning the corner on guys when he could in this game and getting downhill. You know, his shot was hitting. Like, he hits that one absurd, like, he gets the center switch. I think he gets Turner on him, and he just pulls that one from half court. I think you're right. I think there's volatility with Dame. I think a lot of it is dependent on the pull-up jump shooting, but I also just think this is a really favorable matchup where
for sure
Dame just might be able to get comfortable. And that's the thing with Indiana. I don't know if you're going to be able to stop Dame when he's like this on Dame time. Play physical and just make it hard on him. You know, try to drain him. You know, make him work. That's the thing. I don't really think they have the personnel to stop him, but at least you can do is make it hard on him and make him work a little bit. The two guys that you shout out, I want to give a big, big shout out to Middleton and Bobby Portis. Chris Middleton had me fired up, Carson. He's just got such a smooth, elegant game. You know, he was the best mid-range shooter in the league this season. Again, you know, we wondered in terms of efficiency, excuse me, not volume. I believe he shot close to 55% on mid-range jump shots this
year.
He's just one of the best. And when he's in a flow, it's like every one of those pull-up Jays, it's so pretty because nobody else takes them, man. And he is draining all of them. But also, I thought Middleton's playmaking was excellent in this game. Spotting some open guys on the roll, spotting, you know, open shooters. And I thought Bobby Portis played a great game and did his role. And that's why, you know, Milwaukee was able to hang. It was a bad offensive game from then. And without Giannis, I was like, are they going to be able to hang? Middleton and Lillard, you know, pulled their weight. And if we can get this version of Lillard and Middleton throughout the playoffs alongside a healthy Giannis, the Bucks have a potent recipe.
Oh, yeah.
But I just think this is the matchup that's going to be really hard to determine Milwaukee's future playoff outlook against other teams who are just, you know, in different tiers as competitors. You know, I think Indiana's kind of a bad matchup to look ahead, you know, for Milwaukee's future matchups.
If you got this version of Dame consistently, there would be no question that the Bucks are the second best team out East, because then you still have most of the vision from the preseason. But we have seen the Dame explosions, right? He has had games where you are just like, oh my goodness, he is nuclear. And then he's had a lot of letdowns, and he's had a lot more clunkers this year than we're accustomed to from him. But this is a favorable matchup. This was a very important performance from him. Portis and Middleton, again, they're just shooting over these dudes. Like, that was kind of my concern. There's not a lot of easy offense for Milwaukee without Giannis on the floor. It requires a good deal of difficult shot making, but they have difficult shot makers who stepped up in this one. I remember they used to show these charts where it was like the highest percentage of contested jump shots that you attempt. And Middleton would take like 88% of his jumpers contested, and he was still this super efficient offensive player. And that level of shot making doesn't go away with age. He still delivered in that way. I do want to give props to the one pacer who did step up, that being Pascal Siakam, because he was fantastic offensively in this game. And definitely his numbers were inflated when the game really was pretty much over. But I really like his formula to succeeding in this series. He put on a mid-range clinic. And without Giannis on the floor, he's just working with a constant mismatch in one way or another. He can basically shoot over everybody but Brook. But then when Brook is on him, he's too quick and he's able to get a step, can drive on him, or he can create an advantage and then get to a little step back. He can hit the mid-range pick and pops without very much resistance. And he left some points on the table. Like, he missed 5 free throws in this game. He could have easily had 40. He pushed in transition, did his thing there, attacked the offensive glass. And maybe most importantly, like, just kept coming. He was super aggressive when nobody else was making shots, when Hallie was, again, making the right decisions, but doing so in a way that was too passive, in my opinion. Spicy P stepped up, and I think he is in for a very good series offensively. But the Pacers need a lot of things to change if they do want to pull off this upset, because when Giannis isn't on the floor, man, every game matters a great, great deal. And now the Bucks buy more time for him to come back, for him to get even healthier, and you've just missed out on an opportunity to steal one. Hallie has to be considerably more aggressive and more confident in his ability to at least penetrate the defense to some extent, right? He doesn't have to get all the way to the rim and challenge Brook. He just has to get into the paint where then he can create for others or get to his floater. Miles Turner has to shoot and finish just significantly better. He got a lot of good looks in this game, but as you mentioned, he was just missing them, and Halley's creating a lot of good shots for him, but he was 5 of 17. Obi Toppin needs to not play. He didn't even play that much. This is kind of personal. It's just Obi's not very good when we're talking about NBA players, and the shooting is so brutal. He goes 0 for 4 in this one. It just frustrates me. It frustrates me. They have diminished his role, but just I hated seeing Obi take open threes and clang them in this game.
You remember that playoff game last year for New York where he shot like 2 of 13 or something?
I think he made more than that, but he took over 10 threes, and he didn't make a great percentage of them. Yeah, that's kind of the Obi experience. Their spot-up shooting as a whole has to be better, though. And I agree, they do have to just bring more energy, and they have to bring more effort. They don't have good personnel defensively. We know that. They're always going to let up a lot of points, but they got to give you back more than they give up with their offense, which they are capable of doing, and they have to defend at least a little bit better than they did in this one. I'm not expecting much, but I would like to see a little bit more than we got in this one. Ultimately, they're not going to make that Bucks offense uncomfortable, though. It's going to be about them generating great shot quality. I still think they're capable of it. I think they can absolutely take game two without Giannis out there, but Halley needs to be a lot better. That's the biggest thing. Halley needs to be way better for the Pacers to have a shot to win this series.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, last game, Logan. We can go quickly through this one because it's really not going to be much of a series. Heat fans, at this point, if I'm wrong saying that, you guys can do whatever you want. Send me down to the gallows. I'll accept whatever my fate may be. If the Heat make this a legitimately interesting series against the Celtics without Jimmy Butler, then I will be shocked. What did you take away from this one, though, Logan, if anything?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be hard. Is that confirmed? Jimmy is out for this series completely, or?
It's not confirmed, but we had the initial Shams report that it was going to be a few weeks, and obviously he was pretty hobbled. I don't think we have a specific timeline, but I wouldn't be optimistic.
I mean, the Miami Heat are just completely outmatched in their current form, relying on Tyler Hero to consistently go in there and generate you shots. No Terry Rozier out there to even alleviate some of the pressure. There's just a lot of responsibility on guys who aren't equipped to carry this kind of offensive load. If it's Jaime Jaquez, if it's Tyler Hero, if it's Bam Adebayo. And I mean, big shout out to Bam, man. I thought Bam, dude, the Heat go down 14-0 in this game before they score a bucket. I mean, they were down 2 touchdowns before they scored a point, man. That's kind of the theme for Miami in this series, man. Boston is so skilled, so talented, so physical, so athletic, and everything's just going to come easy. And then Miami, it's going to be a grind, man. And they just don't have the defensive personnel to make Boston uncomfortable, to turn this into a real rock fight. Like, everywhere you look, man, it's kind of a mismatch. And Tatum, Tatum playmaked really well in this game, man. I was super impressed with that, their shot making. But point blank period, yeah, I think Miami is a little overmatched. And again, credit to Bam, man, for finding offense for this team and going on the low block and going at Horford and Porzingis and, you know, knocking down post hooks and post fades and doing work there, because this would have been even more of an ugly game if Bam hadn't done that. But without him, man, they just, you know, without Rozier and without Jimmy, it's just so much to ask, dude. You're getting a lot of DeLon Wright minutes, man. You're getting
Hey.
DeLon Wright had a good game. DeLon Wright had a good game. I'll give him that.
Had a good game, and he's had a last good few games.
Actually, I will give him that. The play-in game was impressive. DeLon Wright's minutes there were sick. And it goes to show you, man, that when Boston has this kind of an advantage and can really get clicking, they make 22 three-pointers. That's a Celtics playoff good record. Night. That's a disgusting number. You're not beating the Celtics when they do that to you. This goes to show you, man, what the Celtics can do when they are fully clicking, man. They can just beat down inferior competition. And he did just that. I'll take it a step further, too, man. I mean, at this rate, after this game, I would be surprised if the Miami Heat were able to steal one game if Jimmy Butler is not back. I mean, this is a colossal, just disproportionate amount of talent here, man. There's a massive talent discrepancy and just ability here, man. I don't really know anything that Miami can do to make the Celtics uncomfortable offensively or to generate easy offense on the other side, man. I think Miami's just outmatched.
Absolutely. So I don't think that we need to beat a dead horse. And this is what the Celtics do. They had that stretch where they let their foot off the gas in the fourth, but they were up by, I want to say, 34 points before that Miami run. Like, they just destroy people when they're raining threes like this, which normally they are. Good luck. And this, like, wasn't close to the best Celtics game. They shot the ball really well, but they didn't get out in transition that much. They didn't actually score at the rim all that much. Nobody really played exceptionally well, and they still dominated. There are some specific things that I want to give them props for. Tatum posting up those smaller wings created good offense, and specifically, Logan, against the zone that we know gave Boston fits last year. They faced 9 possessions of zone in this game. They generated 14 points. That's an excellent rate of points per possession. And Sam Hauser was kind of the zone buster just with his ridiculous shooting. But it started a couple of those Hauser threes with a Tatum post-up, and then he would swing, and somebody would swing to Hauser on the weak side, and he would knock down a three. So they handled that well. They weren't even rattled in this game by, like, the thing that has been their Achilles heel in this matchup. And Tatum just did a good job of making the simple decisions, right? Those simple kick-out passes when they doubled, as they did a bit late in the game. He was swinging at open shooters. Nice, clean game, even when he didn't have his best shot-making, smoked that weird layup, but had the triple-double, third triple-double of his career. And KP is an absolute problem. KP is going to be a problem for a whole lot of teams, but you saw that in this game. Like, he was attacking some of those mismatches out of the post. He was raining threes. The Celtics are ridiculous. The one specific thing that I will give them props for, and I don't think you can really have any takeaway from this game, but just a trend that we've seen as this season has gone along. We have known that this is an exceptionally talented starting five, and, like, you could argue, just in terms of how strong the fifth guy is, the best that we've seen this century, I think you'd have a really strong argument. I would say, like, the big four with the peak Warriors outweighs that, but it's ridiculous how good the top five guys are on this team. But the 6 through 8, man, have been really, really solid this year, and they were really good in this game. Hauser, as I mentioned, brought that lethal shooting. Horford always brings the shooting and the IQ and the size. He even attacked a post up in this one. And then Peyton Pritchard, you just get a nice combination of shot making and playmaking and energy. It was a really nice showing from the Celtics bench. Yo, shout out Brady, man. Appreciate that. Sending us some love on the live. Shout out to you, dude. So that was, like, the one thing that I would say the Celtics have just continued to affirm. They're so good, and they're just going to roll over the Heat.
Their talent advantage is discussed in the fact that you got Derek White putting up 20 points in this one, man. Carson, how many Celtics are you taking over the second best player for the Heat?
Oh, wow. Oh, man. I think it's probably just 5. And then I would take Hero
over Horford.
I would say it's just 5. It depends on what kind of team I'm trying to build.
That's true.
It really depends on the role. I just think Hero can carry so much more of a load. Like Horford to me is just great. Give him 20 minutes, have him pick his spots, have him take on this specific defensive matchup, have him space the floor offensively. Hero, it's like he can give you 25. He can float an offense. He's also going to struggle with efficiency at times, though, and then struggle to defend. So it's not that there's a huge gap, but I would say it's 5, but it's 5 by a lot. There is a big gap between the 5th guy and Tyler Hero, and that's just a little bit unfair. Even Coach Spo can't overcome that. We can do the how many players would you take before Coach Spo, but that's not going to move the needle in this series. Any final thoughts as we wrap up on this second day of the playoffs, Logan?
Naz Reid.
Yeah, Naz Reid, dude. Naz Reid will play basketball again in a couple days. That'll be fantastic. Appreciate you guys, all of you who watched along with us live on YouTube, all of you who watched after the fact. We are going to keep doing this consistently throughout the playoffs, and it's just so much fun. I'm just so happy to have this playoff basketball. This is the best, man. This is like Christmas for 2 months, and especially the first round just doesn't stop. I love it. So if you want all those full shows, those are on our YouTube page. You can also listen to the show across audio platforms. You can check out our video essays, video breakdowns that we do also on YouTube, getting some more intense in-depth analysis on specific topics. We will keep coming with those throughout the playoffs. If you want more of our trivia content, NBA and NFL, that is across social media, TikTok and Instagram at NerdSesh, Twitter at Nerd_Sesh. If you want that hat right off Logan's head, you can find that at thevolume.com along with all of our other merch, all of which has been worn by one of the nerds, sweated in and loved. And if you want to join our Discord for a chance to speak to the one and only Matthew Spawnhour, you can find that at the link tree across our social media bio as well. So with that, as always, appreciate you guys. I've been Carson Brabber.
I've been Logan Camden.
And this was Nerd Sesh.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.